Welcome to the Last Lap Podcast post 2023 British Grand Prix edition, sponsored by our friends at Santander. More on them in a bit.
Post British Grand Prix, and what a British Grand Prix it was at Silverstone. Goodness gracious me, ladies and gentlemen, McLaren are back. Thank you very much for watching. Like and subscribe. I'm of course joined by Tomo. How you doing, Bob?
Good. I'm happy. I'm glad the Grand Prix, it lived up to my expectations anyway, at least. And it was a pleasure to watch the Grand Prix here. Not much you can do better on a Sunday than watch a really good quality Grand Prix with really good people as well. Shed, Cam, thank you for joining and staying around for the podcast.
Oh, don't be daft. Thank you for having me and us and listening to all my F1 shenanigans.
Thanks for having us. Great race to watch with you guys.
Not a bad race. And race of the year.
Even there, a little bit of heated debate. It was fun.
Always. And also, quick one at the start, where can the people find you if they want to hear more from Cam and Chez after the fact?
Me and Chez have a podcast with our mate called Baxty, The Shakedown, and you can catch that on all podcasting platforms and on the YouTubes at Cameron F1 Live, and then Cameron F1 for edited videos. You might follow.
Beautiful storytelling, mate.
Mate, I'm trying my best. I'm trying to gain your slipstream, Thomas.
The DRS is open, mate. Chez, you're on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter, at Chez Med, so you can find me. I'll comment on most tweets, often telling you
disagreeing.
Yeah, often telling someone that they're wrong.
that guy who comes.
They love me. Yeah,
well, listen. Do you agree with the assertion that Niro made at the very beginning of this podcast that McLaren are back?
Do you agree with it, Niran? Because
that doesn't matter.
I think you can't say that with a serious face, really.
Now, okay, I'll be real with you. Yeah, as I mentioned on the live show, the McLaren hype train. Yeah, it's pulled into the station. it's there. It's arrived. It's a little bit late. I'll be honest with you. It's been delayed by about 7 years.
How much are tickets?
We got them last minute, so they're pretty pricey. Okay. Not gonna lie. UK train, sort it out. They need to know it right. Anyway,
very LNER though.
It's pulled into the station. I've hopped on it, and I am heading to my final destination.
Full send.
But there's one change.
Go.
Is this just track dependent? That's the change.
Track and temp dependent.
Yeah. And if I miss that change, I'm never getting to my destination.
Interesting. And look, again, to add context, you are a man who drove a 4KA with Lando Norris on your lap.
Yes, that did happen.
So, you know, I just want to put that out there.
I know
that
what
maybe somewhat
about.
Yeah, clouding the
British
the judgment
no,
around
no,
the trim.
No. We said it was very unbiased that day in the car park, and I swore my allegiances to neutrality.
To neutrality
when he was on my lap. Yeah.
Behave. Here's what I will say, Niran. I feel like I'm getting deja vu. This feels very much like Mercedes Barcelona, where all of the Mercedes populace were like, we are back.
The side pods are back.
Side pods are back. And get them on finally. We've got a proper design philosophy. Lewis is going to win everything. We're going to get the eight. And then all of a sudden, next Grand Prix, they pour water on my copium fire. So not yet, bruv. Mm-hmm. Now, let's come back in a couple of months and we'll revisit and be able to get a better determination.
But I don't think even in a couple of months you're going to get an absolute read on it, because the battle behind the Red Bull is just so tight. It changes on such tiny little things that in a couple of races time, somebody else brings an upgrade. They've then overtaken whatever upper potential McLaren had. And that rat race continues throughout the rest of the season. I just don't necessarily, because every time another team makes a big step, the caveat is, well, we'll have to see what's going to happen in a couple of races. But in a couple of races, everything else has changed again as well.
Yeah. I think what I'll say is as well, yeah, actually being like serious. The reason why there's, I think for me, a better or a bigger level of hype here than say Mercedes Catalunya, right? It's because Mercedes, as much as like relatively speaking, compared to like the last 10 years, bit disappointing right now to be feeling like, you know, they're struggling, but at the end of the day they are still fighting for podiums every race weekend, like 80% of the time. McLaren have been nowhere near that
jump
at any point this season, so it feels like it can't be totally track dependent, because you can't gain that much time on everybody just track dependent.
Austria, Red Bull Ring, is very different track to Silverstone, very different requirements on your car. And Lando, with the upgrades, was third quickest car. McLaren was third quickest car in Austria. They've come to Silverstone, possibly second quickest car. Hard to say, obviously, race pace-wise, Mercedes was pretty good. They had a bit more work to do.
It would have been a slightly different story if George hadn't been caught up behind Charles.
Possibly. He had the tyre advantage. And
definitely quicker than Ferrari.
There's so many things that you need to... like Austria is an example. Lando's a demon around that track.
And he loves it, right?
He
actually didn't have the upgrades there. So you don't actually know what the second McLaren would have done in that scenario. So,
But... you do now, because...
or do you? Because he didn't have the upgrades proper around there.
He didn't have front wing.
Not all of them.
He didn't have all of it.
Yeah, because they brought a little... and I think they've got a little bit more coming at Hungary. And then potentially, I think, like Singapore as well. That's what I heard when I went on Monday. Potentially Singapore, there's more to come. So, I guess seeing it perform well in Austria and Silverstone gives me more... cadence to like think, okay, maybe I'll have a little sip of that.
That papaya drink. Maybe still.
Sweet delusion.
But if we have a scorcher in Hungary and they still do well there, then it's a completely different conversation.
Yeah, you're right. Because I think, again, like I think Austria and Silverstone temp-wise, at least for the Friday and Saturday, was about equal, right?
Yeah.
When the sun's out, you get a bit burnt. Well, I do anyway. when it's not, then it's a bit drizzly and a bit a bit sticky, that kind of temperature in both. It was quite similar. So
I'll be interested to see at Hungary, because Hungary's a different...
Yeah.
Like the ambiance is very different. It's a bit more... it can be a bit more humid, So again, that might be...
very different.
That might be track. The old... The final piece of evidence that could facilitate your hopium.
Because the other caveat though is that Ferrari have had a similar issue throughout the season with strongish qualifying and then dropping off in the races with poor tyre management. And they did the same thing they always do, whereas McLaren didn't.
Shez, don't you dare compare Ferrari to McLaren. Ferrari are their own. Do you know what I mean?
None of us backed that hard tyre choice for Norris.
That didn't actually make any sense.
It didn't make sense. As Niro was saying, I was like...
But Lewis and Max were both struggling on their softs and they weren't happy.
Maybe there is something in that.
Wow, imagine if he had put on the... mate, I don't know.
The thing is now, right? So we've got, obviously, Red Bull... particularly in the hands of Max. Like I've said this before, when Checo has a clean qualifying and he starts towards the front, he has the pace to dominate a race and have, for the first five races, 20-second plus gap to the next quickest non-Red Bull car, right? Yeah. He's got it in his locker when he doesn't bodge qualifying. What I'm saying now is that you've got Ferrari, Mercedes, who were the only two teams we gave any hope before this season started of catching Red Bull. Aston Martin shot right up at the start, and we'll talk a bit more about them later. Now McLaren seem to have joined the party with this big upgrade. Which of those four teams would you say, if you had to today, if you had to put money on it, which team catches Red Bull first and gives their drive? Because they've all got top quality drivers who could go toe-to-toe with Max. Which one of those four? It could be.
Bloody
could be McLaren.
Or a Tomei.
I mean, I've got to say, in terms of... if you put everything together, you'd have to put your money on Mercedes. The reason being that they've got tenure. They know in that they've done it before for eight seasons. I know what you're going to say. And in terms of who's bringing in the points consistently across both drivers, race in, race out, Hamilton and Russell both finish as high up as that car can get, whereas there's a massive disparity between the other two teams. Look at Alonso and Stroll. There's no way that that's going to be enough when it comes to the...
but it surely only takes one, even if it's just Alonso.
But if you're talking about constructors, when it comes...
That's true.
I'm talking about catching... there's a...
We're talking about Red Bull.
So regardless of whether it's both cars or one car.
Okay.
Can we have a proper conversation as adults here now?
Let's do it.
Because we all got burned in our picks just now. Everyone said Ferrari and, do you know what I mean? We should know better
by now.
And I think the same applies to Mercedes. Check this out, Shez. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
What were their pit stops saying today?
Okay.
Mercedes.
Three seconds each, right?
Operational.
3.2, 3.9. How long, Shez, has this been going on for? This sort of stuff going on for?
But,
and add to that finally, F1 is a preparation race, right? We're talking about Tomo's question, if I regurgitate it, was which one of these will get there first as far as the challenge to Red Bull. One thing that Mercedes, they're brilliant, right? 8 Constructors' Championships and all that good stuff. But one thing Mercedes have proven themselves incapable of doing is moving quickly as far as fixing for their ills. Mention no names, pit stops, mention no names, dodgy strategic decisions. I can't pick Mercedes. You'd give me, I don't even rate McLaren that highly. I would take McLaren, I would take Aston, and I would take
Ferrari.
I think in the hands of Fernando Alonso, I'm not sure I can back against Aston Martin.
I'm saying Aston as well.
I think Aston are,
you know why right? We talked about this in the stream. Mercedes have so long, because they had such a fantastic car and such a fantastic driver in Lewis, like being able to, and say Valtteri Bottas never out of Q3, right, in that Mercedes. There's different requirements when you're not at the front. And Aston Martin / Racing Point / Force India, the personnel there understand what it takes, and they more often than not make the right calls in that. Also, all this ATR that they've had has just run out. That's not going to pay dividends until about 2-3 months from now. All this 100% ATR that they had for the first half of this year, those upgrades aren't on the car yet. When they come, they've had like about 25% more than Mercedes for the first half of this year.
Plus the 200 mil factory that's come up, just come online. Plus Pop Australia's a gangster. You know what I mean?
I hear it. Canadian gangster.
This is why I still think, even though they had a shocker this race, they weren't great last weekend either. I still think
it would still be recency bias, I think.
With Fernando, best player.
Yeah. Fernando Alonso's still third in the championship. He is the closest one to Red Bull, in terms of this season as a whole.
So. Yeah, look, I do take that point, but I still think that Aston are still in that sort of building phase at the moment. Yes, they've taken a big step between last season and this season, but they still have a lot of process to try and get through. The car that they've got right now isn't even a Dan Fallows car, right? He needs to bed in and actually try and sort of push the development in the way that he wants to bring it.
But they jumped Mercedes and Ferrari still out of a shed. But they flogged all the bits on. We went through it, didn't we? On the auction site, they were flogging all the bits.
They were selling a Force India
toilet. It was still orange and green.
No way.
Their toilet, yeah.
The
guest toilet.
Who buys
it? And they still made that, and they still jumped Mercedes. Right.
So
with this new factory and all this ATR that they've saved up, with Alonso as well.
I am happy to take that. But I think, it's not as if Mercedes don't have drivers, right?
I know, their drivers are incredible.
So they've got drivers. They have got tenure in terms of like how they're going to, like how to win titles, how to win championships. They've got a works engine in the back of their car, which the other two teams do not.
Here's the point though, Shez. I'll use the pit stops as a microcosm, right? Because I just think it's symptomatic of something broader and more insidious. How? We've been having this conversation for 24 months, Shez. Specifically about the bloody pit stops, right? Specifically, Imola last year, when, you know what I mean, like Lewis was meant to come in, and like, just remember when they started Lewis, like they sacked off the race, or Lewis was meant to come in, and then on the restart, it was just Lewis won by himself and everybody else.
Hungry.
How many times? They are serial underperformers as far as it comes to this stuff. And I just don't think framing is important. And if it's Tomo's question, which one of them are going to be quickest to challenge Red Bull whilst they're still out here doing 3-second pit stops for both George and Lewis, and everybody else is doing 2 seconds. I just think it's emblematic.
What is the biggest performance differential? What's the biggest thing that's going to get you
the car?
It's going to be the car. And out of the teams that we're talking about, which of those do we think is going to get a car that's quick enough that's going to be challenging Red Bull first?
Not Mercedes.
I still think it's probably Aston. Just again, for the reasons of ATR, and also
I don't see it. I just think the experience that they have within that team.
A lot of that experience is left for Red Bull Powertrain. Toto's been playing it down, but like it's people at the end of the day, right? These companies have just formed with lots of human beings working in hindsight, and people move. You know, you've got David Sanchez who's going to McLaren. You've had who's the our fellow who's gone from
Blondin.
That's it.
Blondin, Costa.
Like, the personnel change, right? And I think there's different requirements on Mercedes that there once was.
It's tough. Yeah. And it's not lost on me that, I mean, if you three go gym for 12 months every single day.
Have you seen my arms?
Be realistic.
And then
look at me when you said that.
But then on day 366, I think I'm going to bench what you lot are benching. It just doesn't make sense. I haven't just lost 12 months. I've lost 24 months because I haven't been going gym also. And that's where Mercedes
are. You think Mercedes haven't been at the races?
They've been barking at the wrong tree, bro, for 12 months. And it's not just the 12 months that they've been pursuing this dodgy design philosophy. That's not... Everybody else, it's 24 months.
Shez, you said it yourself, right? They've got this factory works engine. Well, why did they start the season behind Aston Martin?
And now McLaren.
They've not banked that advantage.
Yeah, I totally buy the argument that they didn't back the right horse in terms of their concept. Yes, they got that wrong. But I don't think the logic behind going down that route was the wrong logic, and it's the same logic that then informs what they are doing now. Mm. And okay, I understand what you're asking is who's going to get there first. I think they're so close right now that there isn't going to be a massive change between
there's
now and the
clear,
end of the season.
There's no clear. Yeah.
And if you're asking me who's going to make the biggest jump next season, which is where this is really going, I'd still bank on the technical prowess of Mercedes with the development progress that they have now and what they're learning now to make the biggest jump next season. I know I said that last season too. I know I did. but I think they have... They've now got a path that is different to what they had before, and a path that means that whatever jump they make next season is going to be bigger than the jump they made this season.
You said it during the stream. I think diminishing returns is a thing, right? And I think everyone's now seemingly on pretty much the same path. I mean, remember the Williams when that first dropped, and that had very similar zero pods to the Mercedes. They changed pretty pronto on that. So I think it's going to be close at the end of the day. Maybe, like we were saying in the stream, like maybe Alpine jump up. It just takes one big upgrade and you just don't know. These teams towards the back with all the ATR.
Iterative.
Yeah. But I think it's what, like, these cars are going to change a lot recently. But unfortunately, once again, we kind of do have to talk about Checo Perez. Because he's
going to be the first person to challenge Max. Never there.
Look, I was saying this during the stream, right? I think the quality of these drivers is so high that the car makes a bigger difference than ever, because there's no shockers, right? There's no terrible, terrible drivers, right? Yep. Checo's not having a great time. But at the end of the day, I think when he does have a week, you know, qualifying, he's going to get punished more because the others are all there and waiting to jump on a mistake.
You're saying when and not if. Because it's happening every weekend.
It's five
in a row in a Red Bull.
And it's six in total because Australia, like, he also didn't...
Yeah.
Some of those has not even made it out of Q1, by the way.
And they're not... Shame. You know what it is? They're not even like out of his control.
Shame.
He was out of control, but it's down to him. Like Monaco, crash. Austria, bare time in hand. Yeah. Track limits.
Shame.
Yesterday, just not quick enough.
You can't, it's just like...
And again, Valtteri Bottas, Mercedes, never.
Which is chaos.
Never didn't reach Q3.
And that's for all the grief that we get to Valtteri Bottas for his racecraft, he always had enough one-lap pace to at least kind of be there for Lewis as a rear gunner, you know?
But the thing for Checo, the thing that saves him is the fact that Max is sort of winning without even having to try. And if Red Bull were in the position that they were in... Hungary 2019, remember that race? Where actually, if they'd had Pierre Gasly running rear gunner, Lewis wouldn't have been able to pit, stick on a bunch of mediums and overtake him. If they were in that position again, then I think Checo would be at much higher risk of losing that seat. Right now, they've got time to kind of go, we can...
Should that context...
2018, isn't it? It's like that, or 2019 sort of era. It's like, we all kind of know he's not really good enough for this seat, but we can let it slide for now because Mercedes don't have any sort of...
But when there isn't an obvious, a barn door obvious replacement to stick in that seat, I think it's a different argument, right? That's what gives him breathing space.
Isn't there time?
I don't think there's a barn door replacement. Maybe it's because I don't want this replacement to be even considered, right?
Let him cook. Wait, what I will say about Checo Perez, a couple of things working against him this year, but it always happens. This is like the perennial thing, right? Checo has a couple of good races around street circuits because he's a street fighter and the street king and loves a cheeky rear limited track, aka Monaco and all the other ones. Baku also. So as soon as we come out of those and get to the bloody old school Silverstone, his skill set doesn't speak to that. He loves fettering the throttle around the slow hairpin, like Raskas at Monaco as an example. That's what he loves. And secondarily, it's the management expectation thing, because everybody's watching and oh my God, Checo's 2.0 Checo. Do you see the differences in his demeanor? Look how he's talking. He's going to nail Max this year. And then all of a sudden we get to Silverstone. Not the same, plus not to mention the bloody tyres. If you're a tyre whisperer and the tyres get less deggy, then you've lost some of your durable competitive advantage, haven't you?
And again, I think, you know, again, looking back to Austria, you know, his pace wasn't the issue. It was poor decision making. It was pushing at the wrong time. Monaco, Q3, if you do that in Q3, like, I can forgive that, right? I can forgive that in Q3. Yeah. In Q1,
not straight
to
away.
Bin it.
But Tom, I'm not even...
That's something like, that's a decision-making thing.
Wasn't it as well? It was
for me.
First lap
and two years running, chaps. Yeah. Let's not remember. Yeah. And you've just bloody unveiled all the sexy on the floor that nobody couldn't see. I think it's unforgivable. But 2 years running.
This is. I mean, this is it. Checo's problem is that he doesn't understand what his job is, right? He thinks that his job is to beat Max Verstappen, because that's what he's got in his head. His job is actually just to, you know, bring home bankable points, right? That's what he's
but
that is essentially what he's been hired for, and if he can't do that at the moment, that's a big problem.
You know what you know what I said at the start of the season when everybody's talking is to Checo 2.0 stuff, that I think Checo needs to have a word with Nico Rosberg. No, genuinely though, because what Nico did, love or hate Nico, you've got to admire him, because he beat a driver in Lewis Hamilton who was ostensibly much more naturally talented in every aspect, right? Naturally, like, I don't know, racecraft, like wheelsmanship, everything. And the way that he did it is by going over and about. Okay, so you couldn't continue that into the next season because it was too much. But he sacked off, he did a Steve Jobs and sacked off his family, right? He became an F1 driver only. Everything was about the next race.
And that's why he chucked it in after he won.
But you got to make a decision, Tomo. Yeah. If you want to
win, not sustainable for the rest of your life.
It's not sustainable, absolutely not. But if
you did what you had to do.
But it's critical path analysis, right? If you want to win, then these are the measures that you need to take as Checo Perez. You can't approach it like Lewis and just rock up, because you don't have Lewis' talent, bruv. It's not going to take you.
I agree with that. And that is what he's been doing. That's what happened in Q2 in Barcelona. He was trying to drive like Verstappen, and that's what put him off. But I don't think that Perez, even if he did a Nico Rosberg, would be able to do what Nico did to Lewis. One, because Verstappen isn't Lewis 2016, right? I think Lewis was a bit more unstable. It's easier to get under his skin than I think it is for Techie, but maybe.
And they had a bit of a personal.
I don't think Verstappen.
There's a lot of mind games, wasn't it?
But Nico leveraged that.
Yeah, he did.
Nico was brilliant in that parking up in Monaco. He knew. What he understood the assignment, right? And he knew, he did, didn't he? And he knew there was, that even speaks about it. He spoke about it the other day, that Lewis was get attable in this way. Let me park
shit
up
house.
In.
I mean, this was the era when Lewis used to post madness on Twitter.
Remember when he was
Jenson Button?
But
do you think that's what I mean? There was a little chink in the armor that there was not to get into, right? Verstappen, I don't think, has that. And also,
you've got to poke at him.
Have you seen that a little bit Brazil last year?
And what happened? What happened when he poked the bear?
Don't do that and then stop. If you're Checo Perez, somebody wants to have a word with Nico Rosberg needs to have a word with Checo Perez.
But
Sergio Perez only beats Max Verstappen if he shithouses him.
He's got to do all of that stuff, bantering. What are you on the radio? Try and turn the tip like Nico did, right? Well, I remember when they swapped the garages all of a sudden mid-season.
Can you see Red Bull doing that though?
But bruv, you've got to try it if you're Checo. Checo wants the win. And here are the things, Checo, that you need to do if you're going to get that.
I think
that.
He can try and do that. I think it will put him even further behind. I think if he's trying to get into
even
doing the head game.
Even further behind than now.
I mean, I think if he tries to do the head game thing, he's so caught up in his own ability or lack of that he's...
I think Checo understandably feels like he's... I can imagine, right? If I'm in Checo's position and what he did to help Max in 2021... In individual instances, don't get me wrong, he wasn't very close to Max and he should have helped him more than he did in 2021, because that gap was still significant. He closed that gap a little bit relative to Alex, but not by much.
Key races where you remember where he was.
Checo's average finishing position in 21 was, I think, about P P6.6, something like that. It was like far. It was still far off, right? But he's in the big moments, like Turkey, like Abu Dhabi, yeah, he stood up, right? And I think, understandably, he'd feel like I'm owed the chance to go toe-to-toe and not just be that, right? Because I can get where he's coming from, but from Red Bull's point of view, that they want to bank points. They've got Max for the foreseeable. We're seeing now Alex Albon putting in fantastic performances outside of a Red Bull, which I think Red Bull have to take. They must look at themselves a little bit, right? And be like, why couldn't we get this out of Alex?
Do you see right here, yeah? This is where Albon is right now. Yeah, he's in a Williams. There's a Red Bull right here.
Yes. Place him in that.
Well, look. Right. I've got a quote from Helmut Marko. This is from Formula1.de, so a German publication, translated to, I think Alex is doing a great job. He is unfortunately tied to Williams until the end of 2025. Which, first of all, is that a contract announcement for Alex Albon? Because I didn't realize he had a contract. I don't think he does.
That would be very helpful, Marco behavior.
That would be typical.
What do we think Red Bull are feeling right now? Because Checo is struggling. Alex is doing really well outside. He's like left and he's flourishing. And obviously, as an Albon fan, I'm not interested in him going back to Red Bull because I'm interested in Alex. And I think he could get an opportunity elsewhere if he keeps doing what he's doing. Maybe Williams improve. Maybe he gets a shot at, if Lewis retires, maybe, I've seen a lot of people mention that. I've not really been pushing that one personally, but I think I've seen a lot of people say, yeah, could Alex make sense to go to Mercedes once Lewis retires? And maybe you've got a bit of, because I do consider George above Alex, but how do you think Red Bull, like, do you think there's any consideration of bringing him back?
The word unfortunately does so much heavy lifting in that sentence. So much, bro. You know, at the Olympics when they've got like the talcum powder and they're doing up squats and stuff and the bar bends because it's so heavy. That is the level of lifting. Why would he say unfortunately if he didn't think, it would be great if he wasn't out?
He's angling for it, isn't he, Helmut? He's angling for it. I just think, because they don't care.
I just think it's interesting phrasing.
I think it's this simple. For Red Bull and the higher ups at Red Bull, is there somebody out there that can do a better job than Checo Perez is doing at the moment? It is that simple.
Yeah.
That's the start and the finish of it. And the way Alex's form, fair play to him. I didn't have him doing this at the start of the season. He's outperforming. He's overachieving expectations. They would trade him in an instant. Don't be surprised.
But I think expectations were understandably low. I'm not surprised.
Absolutely.
And maybe because I'm biased, maybe because I just take more, I pay more attention to Alex, but I'm not surprised by this. Like, you look at him in junior, like, George, Charles, there's so many drivers who have spoken in support of Alex.
They looked up to him, didn't they?
Right, yeah. And like, he's clearly a quality driver.
Yeah. I think for me, right now, it doesn't have to happen. Like, Red Bull don't need to replace Perez.
Correct.
So it's an interesting conversation. And from the outside, it's easy for us to say, Perez needs to be replaced. But actually, does he need to be replaced for Red Bull to achieve the
objectives?
Right now,
absolutely not. Like, if we're going to be real, like this season, no. But it's a conversation for next season.
But you boys are not getting the assignment right. Put your Helmut Marko cap on. Is there someone out there?
DeVries is shit.
He's a window shopper. Is there something out there that we can put in this car that's going to outperform, give us more than what Checo Perez is giving us, potentially for less money than we're giving Checo Perez?
Sure.
And if the answer is yes, Red Bull won't hesitate to push the eject button on Checo Perez.
Yes, so this comes down to it. Is it good for Red Bull? Is it good for Alex? And those are two diametrically opposed answers, I think.
I don't think they are, Shes.
You think it's good for Alex in both situations?
I don't
at all.
Ah, that ship sailed for me. But from Alex's point of view, think if he keeps, again, we've talked about this, right? How, the law of diminishing returns, all these teams starting to converge somewhat. If Alex, whether it's Mercedes, whether it's Aston Martin, Ferrari, we didn't even mention them, understandably. We don't have much faith in Ferrari, unfortunately. But like, I think Alex, right now, he's at Williams. He's number one driver. He's leading that team. Lando, right, at McLaren, he's number... Piastri's doing great, but Lando's leading that team. He's the team leader there. And if McLaren do deliver, it'd be the same as like, should Lando now go to Red Bull and be number two to Max, even though the Red Bull's the better car? If Lando wants to win a world championship, this is massive copium off of this race, but if being number one at McLaren versus being number two at Red Bull, what's your better shot at a championship in 2025, for example? like,
yeah, I agree. I mean, I think
believing in the regulations, I would say stay at McLaren right now.
Yeah, I think so too.
I would. Because it's Max Verstappen, and it's this team that he's, it's not just because I think Max is a better driver than Lando, it's everything around that. If you would not, honestly, at Austria, it's at least 80% Max fans. He is like, his connection to Red Bull is every bit as powerful as Lewis's to Mercedes, for sure.
The one thing I will say though, yeah, from like a, that's from like a actual standpoint of how the team operates, yeah. But as the car, because obviously the elephant in the room is that like Alex Albon has obviously been Red Bull and struggled massively. But I do think a lot of that was because of how hard that car was actually to drive at that point, because Pierre Gasly struggled so much as well. Do we still think the Red Bull is that geared towards a Max Verstappen driving style?
Because look, Adrian Newey's objective is to build the fastest car possible, and it's not about like can Sergio Perez maximize that. It's not about that. It's about can the quickest driver in my team maximize what I'm making. That's what they're doing right now. So for them, there is zero reason to tweak their car to make it easier for the second driver.
Yeah, I hear that.
So I don't think they're going to do that. Lando seems to like a car on the nose a bit more, which is why he's able to sort of drive the McLaren as well as he does right now. So if, I think he'd give Max a hard time. But Tomo, as you're saying, even aside from the car, there's so much in that team that is just built around Max.
No, you're not messing about, man.
I mean, I agree. I take your backing yourself, and every F1 driver should, but there's backing yourself, and there's putting yourself into an impossible situation.
Well, tell that to Senna in 88 when McLaren were trying to sign him. Nobody thought that he was going to nail Prost. If it, by your guys' logic, Senna just sacks it off and goes and builds another team around himself. Sometimes in F1, the risks are worth the rewards. Alex Albon, what do you want, mate, from this?
Prost's relationship with McLaren compared to Max's relationship with Red Bull.
More embedded. It's completely different.
It's Verstappen.com racing. Like, he's eSport. That Red Bull have gone all in on Max. Like, he's, if anything, he's more affiliated with Red Bull than these Red Bull racing. Yeah.
So let riddle me this then, chaps. If, hypothetical world, Alex Albon jumped in that car a couple races in, they saw signs of life that Alex Albon could potentially drive that car, that very twitchy RB20 as it will be then, quicker than Max Verstappen. You don't think Helmut Marko and Christian Horner, do you think they have... They have the allegiance to the quickest driver.
Agree. Yeah, I agree with you.
So, but all you guys are nailing it right. Of course, the team is embedded and built up indeed around Max Verstappen. Of course it is. But if Alex Albon jumps into that team and shows just a smidgen, just a sign of life that he could nail Max Verstappen. Red Bull, are you guys the bulls that are red, chaps? Mate,
no, I agree with you.
I don't see that happening.
But as an F1 driver, Tomo, you've got to be in your mind least.
Alex can back himself.
He's got to.
But I don't think there's any way Red Bull look at Alex and think, oh, he could match if not beat Max.
Not yet. That's why Alex's task, if he did choose to accept it, would be to jump in the car and show them. That's proof positive. It's huge, bruv. But you're a flipping F1 driver.
But there are easier ways.
If you don't believe, then sack it off and go home from now. F1, chaps.
Okay, but I'm talking about this like I'm Alex's mum, right? So Alex is going to come home.
My boy will not race for you.
So I'm telling you, Alex is going to come home. He's going to go, Mum, I think I can beat Max. And Mum's going to go, Alex, I don't think so, mate. Why don't you try and do something else?
Why don't you do your washing? Like, you know, clean up your bedroom.
And I think Alex's mum would be right, because look, his objective
Alex's
mum's always her best, to be fair.
They do. His objective is to win the world championship, right? Realistically, and this is taking off your Alex hat, right? I am Alex hat.
I will never take that off.
If you take that off, do you think that his best chance of actually winning a title
100% is in the best car? Absolutely.
I don't see that. Max in the other car, I don't see
that. Your problem, as I see it, the problem that presents itself most frequently in F1, getting in a car that's capable of winning a championship. You know how many dudes have never even stepped foot in one?
Okay, let me retort that. Right? So you're basing that off the history of Formula 1. With no cost cap, with no sliding ATR scale,
this is it.
With teams dominating time and time. I think Red Bull with Vettel, obviously, you know, Alonso managed to somehow get in the fight in 2012, right? But this sport more often than not has had a car dominant at the front. Yeah. Plus, combined the best drivers, the gap between the best and the worst. Plus, then you add, you know, the McLaren that Senna and Prost were driving in the like later 80s, early 90s. Yeah. I think in this day and age, again, seeing the convergence and looking, you know, maybe next year, almost certainly 2025, the year before these new engines come in, which could, you know, mix it up again a bit, right? Like, surely that just being in that one, there's not going to be that one team at the crescendo like there is right now. I like to think so. And I think there's enough going on in the sport to not, you can't guarantee anything, right? Because again, you can only regulate the sport to an extent. Ultimately, it's on the teams to catch up with Red Bull. Yeah, it's their responsibility to do it. Yeah. But I think everything's in place now to give the best hope ever that you won't need to be in a Red Bull to fight for a championship.
I think next season, is going to really shape a lot of drivers' mentalities of what they want to do with their careers. I think next year is going to be a big year because we started to see signs this year that if you're a McLaren or an Aston Martin, slap one good upgrade on this car and you can suddenly challenge for podiums straight away.
Yeah.
If that gap, I mean, again, it's diminishing returns, but if that gap then is sort of replicated and replicatable up towards Red Bull again, and you can suddenly start winning races regularly.
Mm.
If you are a Lando and you're getting to 2024, end of 2024, McLaren are actually challenging for race wins, then you go, well, bless it.
And you've got the team.
But if you're not, if Red Bull are still dominant at the end of next season, that's when someone like Lando or Alex goes, maybe I do have to be in a Red Bull to do achieve what I need to.
And I just think if we're playing probabilities, Tommy, you make really good points around new era, cost cap, et cetera, et cetera. But I would argue that the cost cap, and we've seen evidence of this, if you look back historically, whenever there's a massive rule and reg change, the dominance doesn't cease after 2 years. Most of the time it trickles down, it becomes less dominant, but this is like a 3-4 year dominance thing that
but again, you had Ferrari, Mercedes spending $400 million a year, and then you know, Force India spending 110 million.
But don't you think, Tomo, that the cost cap? I would invert your argument, and I would say that the cost cap lends itself to dominance more, because no longer can Mercedes just get $400 million and go, boop, here's my new floor, here's my new chassis, here's my new ring, and my flipping. So like, they can't do it because they don't have the. They're not allowed.
You always have the big teams that spend the most money at the top anyway. But, so those other teams,
and they still have the infrastructure. Vowels has been talking about that.
So I don't think you can do that in season anymore. I think trying to, if you've got a dominant team,
but what cost cap doesn't exist off season.
In that you can make bigger jumps between seasons when you can change the architecture of your car, which you can't do in season. That's what's hamstringing a lot of these teams at the moment. You know, Mercedes has talked about the fact that they can't change the architecture to bring the seat a little bit further back, not just because of the cost cap, but because the rear suspension is homologated with the gearbox, so they can't change those things right now. Whereas between seasons, there is more scope for that to happen. So knowing what's going to happen in 2024, and what you'll see next season, I think, is that all of the cars, like you said, will start to converge a little bit more towards what Red Bull are doing, and they'll look completely different to how.
I mean, look at the Ferrari side pods now compared to
the
fish bowls they had at the start. Yeah.
That'll happen even more next season.
And cheese graters
drives like a bat.
I don't share in your optimism, lads.
For the Yorkshire pudding. you heard that one.
So something new. Our friends at Santander want us to prove our knowledge of the science behind Formula One starting today.
Santander and Formula One have been working together to try and educate us motorsport fans on the inner workings of racing, whether that be technology, design, or science. STEM and motor racing have been forever linked, and they brought those two elements together to create Lap Zero, a quiz to test your F1 knowledge with hundreds of prizes up for grabs.
To support the launch of Santander Lap Zero, we are starting a duel from now until the end of the season, 5 races. It's Tomo versus Niren, best of 5.
Let's go.
Oh, you boys on the questions, we're on the answers. We've got our whiteboards here.
Yeah.
We will reveal, obviously, any audio-only listeners, what we've written down, and hopefully it won't be too techie, as you would say, Cameron. Yeah.
Cameron, if you could just give me the answers, like, I'll just text them.
No, this is this is a duel.
Oh, yeah.
This is a duel. This is a multi-race duel over the remainder of the season.
Right, okay, we'll just text me
the multi-race. Be yourself, Niren. Right, here we go. These are the questions taken directly from the Lap Zero quiz, to be clear.
Ooh.
Okay, first question. What is the impact of the concept of suspension geometry on a Formula One car's handling? A, suspension geometry improves the car's acceleration. B, suspension geometry is used in the...
Go on.
It's all right.
Crack on.
It's big words. He's got big vocabulary notes, and he's a serious, serious word.
Exactly.
Suspension geometry is used in the designing. Flopped it again. Sorry. It's pressure, man. I'm telling you. Suspension geometry is used in designing the car's exhaust system. And C, suspension geometry influences grip and handling. What are you saying, boys?
You know, as a man,
this is not all of the above.
The problem, like, I was thinking that. Now, obviously, there's a slight disadvantage I have, I feel, in the fact that I can't drive a car. So there's certain things that I'm not gonna, you know, get.
What do you think a driving test is?
Well, what does the suspension geometry
Those wishbones don't look very aero efficient on my Prius.
Is that not what the? Is that not what the what's it called? Before you do your test, what's the theory?
I'm not helping you.
Is that not what your theory is?
No. Well, I mean, you have to check where you know where the bloody like the oil dipstick is.
Where's the steering?
That's about it. Where's the steering?
Behave, Nero.
Oh, so acceleration or because I feel I don't want to talk openly because this is a duel, right?
It is a duel. There's a lot this on the line duel. Here, so I don't want you to accidentally give me the answer.
Okay,
as a knowledgeable man.
I am gonna write. Mine, as this pen is not working, but
I've
there you
tried,
go.
I've tried to listen there.
I'll make it work.
What he's writing.
He's written. Oh yeah,
stop.
I was just gonna write.
You got to watch direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the
I've just written the letter.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
How big was the letter?
What do you mean? What? I've got a big white. I've just drawn a little letter on it. This is an audio and visual podcast, Nero. So the people need to see.
True. That is true. Everyone needs to see it.
I'm ready to reveal mine. Do you want to count us in, boys?
Yeah,
cool. Three, two, one. Reveal!
Bow! I've gone A.
I've gone C.
Divergence.
I'm
thinking like, you know, acceleration out of corners, traction.
You spring out of the corner.
The back of the car kind of dives, you know, like anti-dive, but the opposite.
The suspension
maybe helps.
I hear that front. But as a car expert,
traction zones, that's what I'm thinking. So right, I've gone A.
Yeah, no, I've gone for C, personally.
It's a bit techie that. Tomo, your F1 pimp card is revoked straight away, sir. God. I think it does do a little bit of that, but mostly... It's for C, isn't it?
Yeah.
Suspension geometry influences grip and handling.
Yes, mate.
Well, that's the obvious answer.
Yeah. Sometimes you've got to pick the obvious answer,
that's
bro.
That's the obvious answer,
sometimes you've got to pick the obvious answer.
Okay. I know what we're doing.
No brain cells in here.
That's what I was saying. Like, that's what I was like, all of them, right? Surely. So surely suspension. Oh,
you're better than that, son.
Yeah, I literally did motorsport engineering at college. So.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, my days.
No, but you can't
lose
it too deep. That's what I mean.
That was way
too
deep.
Nothing to lose, boys.
It does do a bit of that, though.
That's what I'm thinking, like traction zones, like the
it does do a bit of that.
Deep and
it does do a bit.
By the way, lads,
too many.
To be fair, I was thinking specifically rear suspension. I guess it's suspension. So
excuses. By the way, lads, we're going to do a forfeit. We're going to do a forfeit for this.
Oh, it's nice to bring that up now.
Yeah,
after it's 1-0.
Yeah,
go on.
Obviously, it's 1-0 to your boy right now, but. We will be doing a forfeit for this, which you can check out in the next show. And actually, you guys can decide down in the comment section.
Yeah, we've got a few. Maybe we should wear something in the next stream.
Yeah, bring something along. Can only speak in Spanish.
Oh, wow.
That would be great. And I would lose.
Get on the Duolingo.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In seconds,
mate.
It'll be at this.
All right. Oh, what are you doing, mate?
That's my phone.
Oh, there you go. That's what you got.
That needed some suspension.
Because it accelerated really quickly.
Accelerated down.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not handling it right now.
Should we do question two?
Yeah, slap us with
Shez, do you want to give us
question two?
Question two. Okay.
Are you ready?
Let's have it.
No, not anymore.
Why are the cockpits of Formula One cars so small? Is it A, to make the car lighter, B, to fit into the parking space?
The parking space.
C, to reduce the car's frontal area for better aerodynamics.
Ooh.
Wait, what was A again? I'm going to forget that. It wasn't even a long question.
A, to make the car lighter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was the fact that I forgot that is actually crazy.
I have my answer.
I really want it to be the parking spot because the thing is, like,
well, it didn't specify the kind of parking spot.
They do have to get in the garage, I guess.
Is it one of those?
That is true. Yeah. No, maybe this is a trick question, you know. I'm just thinking, you know, if you're in a supermarket car park, I'm not going to name any names specifically, and, you know, it's busy, it's maybe, I don't know, 6 in the evening, it's after work.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've driven your F1 car to the shops.
Yep.
You're going to need to get into a tight space probably because it's going to be rammed.
But it'll be the cockpit that stops that happening, right?
Specifically the cockpit. Specifically.
Nothing to do with the...
Not the wheels.
Nothing to do with the wheelbase or the...
Question it!
Okay. I've got my answer.
Ooh. My pen's running out.
Got my answer. It's just
bad news. Can I borrow your pen?
That's not my fault. Are you mad? No. Are you crazy?
Well, I've just rubbed it out.
Go on then.
Jeez, boss.
Go on then. If you get this right, and I get this wrong again, that I'm...
I think it's the whiteboard.
Maybe it's the whiteboard. Just, hang on.
Blames their tools.
That'll do.
That's it. All right, that'll do.
You've definitely seen what I've written.
Well, I can't change it because I've already given you my pen.
There you go.
So there you go. Right.
All right. Big reveal.
Right. Okay.
In 3, 2, 1, C.
Bow, C.
Wow, convergence. C is the correct answer.
He's 2 for 2. 100%.
Great convergence.
I'm
hoping there's like, I can come back and there's like a tiebreaker or something. That's what I'm banking on.
We don't have a tiebreaker. It's I win on away goals. Because you went college for this. Specifically.
Away goals aren't a thing anymore. Yeah, right? They've stopped away goals and serve away. Right, okay. Final question.
All right.
Come on then, Cam.
Hit us with it.
Final question. How does a Formula One car's exhaust system contribute to its speed? Is it A, by making the car lighter? Is it B, by using exhaust gases to spin a turbine in the turbocharger? Or C, by cooling the engine?
The way I'm thinking about this, the exhaust... It could cool the engine because the air just goes. Actually, no, wait, hang on. I could have been about to say something very stupid.
Can we run him out of time, please?
There's no time limit My memory
is fumbling, eh?
My memory's useless, bro. I have ADHD. What was B again?
B was by using exhaust gases to spin a turbine in the turbo charger.
Is that a wind turbine or is that just a general? General
Dutch style
solar panel wind turbine.
I'm not helping you at all, mate, because I'm behind here, so
I cannot confirm or deny any of those details.
That's the worst letter I've ever written in my life, but I am ready. I've got an answer.
And your answer is a reveal on 3, 2, 1, reveal.
B.
Both.
What's he put?
I put B.
And that
I can't win.
It sounded the fanciest, so I just did that one.
And that, fellas, makes you both numpties because that's the raw. No, I'm joking.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way hot exhaust gases are cooling the engine. That seems a bit.
I'll be honest, I thought about it.
I did think about it.
Was that the final one?
That was the final
one.
No,
as in, was that the final option?
Yeah.
I didn't go with it because I was like, they can't all be C. So I went with B.
Oh my days.
Yeah.
You mad?
Inteligente. Intelligence. Think about it.
Yeah, good Tommy. Wheel knowledge, sir.
Wheel knowledge in the bin.
Well, listen, if you check out ebay.co.uk/Tomo, you'll find my channel up for auction. So I'm taking bids from next week onwards. So there you go. Look, listen, it's this man, it's a surprise package, you know? I couldn't handle it.
I can't believe I've just won a technological Formula One quiz.
Do you win a driving license?
That's it. I'm qualified.
I've got mine.
I've got the license.
I do have mine with me, but I can't reach it. So there you go. Never mind. I'm looking forward to this ongoing duel, actually.
Yes. Yeah. Because I might have won the battle, but I haven't won the war. Is that the right way?
That is the way.
Yes. Yeah. It is. So
what did you think of our knowledge, boys? Would you have got all them right? Probably.
Tom, I'm not going to lie. That first one,
I overthought it. I'm sorry.
Disappointed. a little bit.
Because tires are actually a bigger component in terms of
FOMO, but you're not.
The suspension doesn't
really. That question was designed to try and
It's a little bit, but
it's not like a rally car with like springs going up. Like,
primarily, it's not even. You know, it's grip really. No,
it sounds like a lot of coke.
Yeah, they've got the little springs.
I mean, we've just been talking about why Mercedes is so SH1T, and that's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah,
should have known.
Until next season.
Oh, keep dreaming, you don't want to dream because it would mean too much if they did do well.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Mate, it means a lot. It means a lot. Look at their bloody 3 second pit stops.
3.9.
When you watch back the pods, you see it like, I look like Charles Leclerc, right? It's put out all the air and hope out of me, but hey, I digress.
So the final scores in round one of the Lap Zero quiz are 3-2 to Niren.
I don't know how I frauded this one, ladies and gentlemen.
Listen, like you said, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
So as we know, this is a 5-race battle. It is firmly not over yet. And you can stay tuned and see what happens with the rest of the results with us and Santander with the Lap Zero quiz between now and the end of the season.
Thanks again to Santander and F1. And make sure you play the Lap Zero quiz because a bunch of you might well be joining us, me and Niren, in Maranello later this year for a VIP experience. All the details are in the description below. Get to it. Good luck. Something else I did want to touch on, though, before we go too deep into that rabbit hole, is a bit different, a bit off-track stuff. The whole Apex GP stuff.
Oh.
Seeing the film crew around. Yeah. First of all, but I just want to get your thoughts in terms of this movie, what we've seen so far. We've seen pictures of the cars. We've seen that they've got a garage plumb in the middle of the pit lane as well, which I was quite surprised about. You've got Brad Pitt knocking about in F1 cars. You had him driving around just after each session. What are we thinking? Are we confident this is going to be a good interpretation of Formula One?
Zero confidence in that, but...
It was nice, yeah.
You didn't even take a breath.
Don't need to.
No. But,
not even with Lewis's producer. How dare you?
But 100% confidence that it's a good thing for F1. Like, I've been crying out for this stuff for like 20 years. You know, all I've had is...
Rush.
Qualifying race.
Rush is a good film, though.
And then... But now
this is like modern coverage of F1.
Now we've got interest. That means that parties outside of Formula One are interested. Rush was a great movie. Mm. You know, even the Le Mans 66 movie was great.
Oh,
okay, it wasn't about
God.
Formula One.
What a film!
Right, it wasn't about Formula One, but it means that motor racing is back in the spotlight, and that can only be a good thing.
But I think this helps as well because all the current drivers, I saw some pictures of the timing. They've created their own kind of made up timings and like telemetry and all that. Yeah. And you have all the current drivers. So, whether it's Joe or Leclerc or Albon, they'll be in the movie, not acting, but they'll be in the movie. And I think having that closer tie to the real sport,
Noda.
It's almost,
film.
He's in the film. These will be in this film forever as well, by the way. Yeah. It kind of like captures you in time.
2023.
Yeah. And I just think that it's a closer tie to Drive to Survive. And we're talking about this on the stream cam about the sport and how this is a tough sell this season. I've noticed it on my channel in terms of like my viewership has dropped. I know compared to some of the streams we were doing like end of last year, even like, you know,
people
the view, there's been a degree of drop off. And I think stuff like this is important in re-engaging those kind of
fans. It's a different way to try and get fans in when you don't have the product on track and with the best will in the world, you can't have the best.
Wait, I've got the title for this clip. Can Brad Pitt save Formula One?
Oh my God.
Yes.
Lock it in, Lewis. That's it. We're done.
Oh dear. Go on, Shiz.
You have to find different ways to do it. DTS was a really good way to get fans interested and then tee them up for that 2021 season.
Mm-hmm.
And having movies, having documentaries, and different narratives within that when you have a dominant season like you do right now, that's what you've got to do. You've got to do this. You've got to find other ways to bring people in and maintain the interest that you had before.
And you know, Welcome to Enstone's coming.
Oh, mate. Take that. Anything, all of this stuff is all good, right? Anything that's like, and I would have turned up my nose at this Drive to Survive stuff. That's not for me.
Or Surviving to Drive, the book.
Yeah, just give me the racing. I'm not interested in all this nonsense stuff, but it is important, chaps. It really is important. Like you say, Tomo, the space is, it is massively shrinking, right? And we were blessed in 2021 with a bloody blood and guts season on the back of a COVID hiatus and with Drive to Survive just coming out and just doing crazy numbers, right? So you had this, these three things that were almost like an act of God, breathing new life into a sport that was not dying, but not doing as well as it could have been. So I think I agree with what you're saying, Shez, that this F1 film is good, but I wouldn't expect to see the massive uptick in viewership and attendance because on the back of that, that we did on the back of
it
COVID,
won't, but it'll, Drive to Survive. I think it'll also just like reach out to a slightly different audience again. You know, you've got someone like Brad Pitt that's going to be in it. That's just like the American casual film watcher audience.
Yeah.
They like would never, ever think about watching Formula One, but fucking Brad Pitt film. Like,
Tomo, let me ask you a question, because you're the maven in all this.
What's a maven?
Specialist, an expert.
your dictionary is too big for me, Cam, sometimes. I'll keep up.
I don't know what I'm talking about. How would you, what do you think F1, what are the low-hanging fruit that F1 could do to not only bring in new eyes, but to keep the ones that they've just brought in on the back of Drive to Survive at a time when Max is so bloody dominant every single race?
Yeah, I mean, I think something like, we've talked about, you know, selling a story throughout, and I think to go back to the whole Ryan Reynolds, Rob McElhenney thing, right? They took a football team, small football team in the North of Wales, Wrexham, and created, they weren't by far, they're a team in the bloody conference, that National League. And they took that institution and they created so much. What's the other football series that's been going on for ages?
Ted Lasso,
yeah. And that's taken the story of a small team and working up. I think there's, again, we talked about this in the stream, like when you don't have a fight at the very front, it's always a difficult sell. A race will only be so good if you don't have that proper scrap at the front, because it will always mean more when there's a fight for a lead, right? Great, great battle if it's P14. Like, we're going to love it, but like, it's not going to stay long in the memory like a move for P1.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't know, when Leclerc and Verstappen scrapping in Bahrain first race of the season last year, right? That stays long in the memory because it was a fight for the lead.
Mm-hmm.
So I think telling those stories, there's a proof of concept again in other sports that to get people invested in these other teams and these other characters, and we saw again Drive to Survive, Günther Steiner's got a huge fan base because of Drive to Survive. He's a Haas team principal. They're not fighting at the front. Mm. But I think telling those stories engages and turns where I can really enjoy a battle for P8.
True.
Like,
because you're invested.
And yeah, of course, it's always going to be, you know, when Lando overtook Max for the lead, like, that means more because it's for the lead. Of course, that's always going to be the way. But I think because you have to, I think, build an infrastructure into the sport where it's not reliant on every season, every race being an absolute banger for there to be any interest, because we got that in 21, but that's not going to happen. That's unrealistic to expect.
And I think one thing that they don't do at the moment is the technical aspect of it. And I think the mistake that F1 often makes is that they think that the technical aspect of it is going to go over everyone's head. But until you realize that it's actually just about people, it is about Adrian Newey versus Dan Fallows versus James Allison. If you can bring that story in,
tell those stories.
Yeah, there's still an underdog story there of like Dan Fallows going to Aston Martin and then, you know, challenging the big boys. Yeah.
But F1 doesn't tell stories, or it hasn't done for ages.
Yet.
Like it just doesn't, I don't know whether it's the bloody British bias thing and the stiff upper lip, and we don't want to brag about this fantastic sport that we all hold so near and dear to our hearts. But F1, and you got, as a football Donnie and a West Ham fan, you like when you watch Amazon, yes,
Gammon.
when you watch bloody All or Nothing is a good example on Amazon Prime, where is that for F1?
Yeah, agree.
There's nothing like the level and the quality. I mean, like Son screaming at Lloris, that goes viral instantly. There's nothing in the F1 space that could even talk to that.
I think
it doesn't exist.
I was genuinely going to bring that up. I think, I feel like, again, it links back to the absence of people in terms of like, obviously, yes, cool, there's drivers that are humans, bless, but the making of the car, everything about a team is the people that are involved in it. And I think it would bring so many different, like, almost it would bring bigger stars to the show, almost, if you actually tried to tell the stories of these
pit crews. Pit crews.
the highs and lows of being in the pit box. Like literally for Q3, I was in Red Bulls. I was super like, I got to go in the little viewing gallery, right? And I'm there when Max is going out and he's pulling back in, right? And you see like when that story's not told, you kind of take it for granted that they're going to get the car out. Literally like 30 minutes before the session, like it's all got, all the body panels are off and like there's all one little screw that's not that tightened properly. Every single wheel, right? They do every single one. It's the exact same cadence of like the, cause it's so like military precision. And when things go wrong, like I was in there, Lando went P1 and I was like, and then like the whole, it was silent. And then Max went P1 and they were like, yeah.
We need so to see that.
Like, show us those stories. Cause they exist. They're there. You don't even have to, you don't have to play up for the cameras. Just tell the story.
Yeah.
But that's the low hanging fruit, right? That's the stuff that they can go after when there isn't a race on track. And it's, and as you say, it's been shown in other sports that will help you retain.
Make people retain massive life. Alpine fans. I went to Austria. Yeah. I saw one person in Alpine top.
Yeah.
Like, create something where that becomes this cult team that like people want to follow by making this great series.
That is a definite thing that is a low hanging fruit in a sense of, I really don't think it would be that difficult to instill, but also you just have to try and work out a strategy for it. Just some level of like,
get the bloody cameras in there.
Yeah, get the cameras in there. Get it, make viewers feel like they can relate almost to a team.
Yeah,
get the, you don't get someone go, I'm a Haas fan.
Yeah,
no one cares. Not in a bad way, right? But like, no, in a bad way. Actually. But no one.
Are you
cares.
Still blocked on Twitter?
But even like, just anyone that isn't like a historical team or a team that's winning, there is no one that will go, oh yeah, I love Alpine.
Just
I love Aston Martin. Just, instill that, just, because then you'll get people who are invested in the sport, no matter what is going on at the front.
Yeah. That share is so clever for Alpine, because it helps on two fronts, like 200 million to inject into infrastructure, plus an actual media company to tell them where they're going wrong and find the stories and the people within their team that can make them interesting.
I'll just say super quickly, how about you get some cameras in there? Brazil 2022, when Checo and Verstappen are having a quarrel over sick or whatever it is, and Checo's like, now I know who he is. Get the cameras in the bloody...
Right,
post race briefing. Can you imagine?
Oh, yeah, Drive to Survive pisses me off with this.
This is it. This is exactly it, right?
Yeah,
it pisses you off because they don't cover enough, because they're trying to cover everyone.
Yeah,
on 20, it's going to be 24 weekends next year. You can't like in 10 episodes, you can't cover it all
at all.
So many people get pissed off with Drive to Survive because it misrepresents stuff sometimes.
Oh, mate,
that's the number one. Number two, you're not showing enough. Whereas, I remember, was it Vettel had a really good performance somewhere last year? And they didn't even cover
it at all, really.
Yeah, because they probably just didn't even have the cameras in the Aston Martin garage at the time. So do it individually, focus on each of these teams individually.
They do find some of the stories though. Like they had the team principals having a massive argument
with
the Costco. Brilliant.
That was brilliant.
Right?
Change your effing car.
It's 1 minute, but it's like,
just bring more of that.
Yeah, they need to get a hold of the viral.
Where are the drivers' briefings now?
Bang.
Oh, fucking hell. Bang. Where have they gone?
Even the bloody cool down.
Yeah. Brad Pitt was in the one this weekend as well. He was actually in the driver's briefing.
You can't get them on
it, but it's so far removed from when the action actually happens. What you want is the week, in the week following a falling out on track, you want to see what happened in
that would be good, bro. But I think that's levels. I don't even want that much. How about, the cool down room that we just watched? What are the best that we can do is show the cool down room with no commentary. Okay, cool. I'm happy for that because I want to hear what they're saying. But then after that, we're just going to go to the podium and talk about that. No, I want to hear some people talk about what's been talked about in the cool down room is the best bloody bit.
I've not had many good words to say about Formula E over the years. I think it's getting better, but they do that really well.
They get
the drivers together to watch the highlights and then the drivers talk about the race.
Why not?
Yeah. It's such a good idea.
It's genius. So can you imagine?
It's proper awkward sometimes because they're like sat next to each other and then you see the crash.
That's cold. That's clear.
You didn't give me much space there.
You don't have to be a genius.
One of the funniest football moments I remember seeing was when Sky got Harry Kane to react to him diving, I think it was.
Only said oh yeah, and he said on my kid's life or something.
I don't think they've done it since because they got like, I don't know if they got a bit of a backlash from just like Tottenham fans about it, because it was the only time they've ever done it.
Sounds like
genuinely that sort of shit is so funny,
mate. Yeah.
It creates it's moments. Human.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Tomo, you've said it there. And I will say, finally, on this, like, there are lessons. I do feel like when I watch football and the way it's covered, I feel like we're almost like 5 to 10 years behind in F1. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's a certain thing, even the way Micah and Roy Keane and Gary Neville are covering it, they're having fun in the coverage, right? Is, yeah. Oh my God. So you're getting the knowledge, but you're also being entertained. Even if you don't, I can show that to my missus and she doesn't watch football, but she catches it when Roy Keane goes, "Is a baby? Baby." It's viral because it's hilarious and it carries to where my missus will laugh it as well. Where's that in F1, chaps?
Yeah.
Who's doing that?
That's CBS coverage.
But oh my God, Jamie.
But that's the thing.
Where's that? Yeah. Who's that? You don't even have... maybe a little bit, but
yeah.
Ted.
The thing is, there's that one kind of English speaking broadcast. And I guess with football, you get lots of different, you've got the Sky team, you've got the BBC team, you've got CBS and whatever. So I think that's kind of.
But these are baby steps for F1 at the moment in terms of, like, you know, it's not been like 5 years when Bernie Ecclestone was saying F1 doesn't need to be on social media, right?
Yeah, true.
Like, I mean, the amount of progress has been made since then.
Old rich people buy Rolexes. Yeah. That's almost a quote.
It's not far off. I remember the quote verbatim, mate, but I don't even want to repeat it. It's so heinous and politically incorrect.
It's mad. There you go. Boys, I've really enjoyed this one, by the way. This has been a banging podcast. Let's finish up with Equal Machinery.
Right.
Did brief you, Shez, at the start, because you've not done this before. Equal Machinery, where we are all assigned a driver / team or whatever to argue in favour, whether we believe it or not. And then we kind of will discuss briefly at the end what our thoughts are. So the topic chosen by our producers for this.
And Lewis owes me a favour from last time.
The biggest... fumblers in Formula One.
Oh, okay. Mate.
So, this is a mixture of drivers, teams, organisations. I've been given McLaren,
you're going to struggle with recency bias now.
I'm going to change that to Aston Martin because McLaren just had a banging race. So, I'm going to give myself Aston Martin.
Whoa, executive decision.
I was going to say my name, but my name's not up there. It's the last lap.
Now, why don't you have Alpine?
Who should I get, because Cam, you've got Ferrari, so I can't have Ferrari.
That's a banker.
I'll give myself Perez, because Perez is not on here. So you get Ferrari, Perez, the FIA.
Oh my God, that's something.
Nick DeVries for you, Shez.
Oh, biggest fumbler ever.
Biggest fumblers in Formula One? Who's feeling confident?
Who is having a stinker?
Who's feeling confident?
I need to think, actually.
Oh, Cam's feeling confident. He just gave me a wink. Cam, you're starting. 30 seconds on why Ferrari are the biggest fumblers in Formula One. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Ferrari are the biggest fumblers in F1 because they don't manage expectations. Each and every single off-season, we are promised the world. We are fixed for the ills. The pit stops are good. We've been practicing them. The tyre deg is no longer. The car is fast. And every single season, it's a myth. It's just completely false. They've lied to us once again. I came to the last lap today having picked Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz for top five, and it was ball.
Wow. That was good.
Yeah, that was good.
This guy's
good. The presentation of that, I think, was sensational.
That was exceptional. Right, next.
Do you want me to go next?
Go on then, Niren. FIA. Unload on the FIA. 30 seconds. Right. Why are the FIA the biggest fumblers in Formula One? In 3, 2, 1, go.
The FIA are the biggest fumblers in Formula One because every bad decision they make actually affects everybody else. And they manage to make such bad decisions on such a regular basis. We've got, obviously, Abu Dhabi 2021. Michael Massey making up his own rule book that evening. Okay, ladies
literally
and
rules.
And I was very hungover at the time. It was hard to follow, not gonna lie. We've got like Japan, tractors on track, just constant mismanagement, not understanding their own rules, and it affects us, the fans, too.
Bosh.
Man, 30 seconds is hard. What a fuck.
Yeah, man.
Well quick.
Super legit.
I'm used to a minute, man. I started waffling halfway through.
GTI version.
Yeah.
Let's go.
30 seconds on why Nick DeVries is the biggest fumbler in Formula One. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Bold. Nick DeVries is the biggest fumbler in Formula One because he had all the goods, all the advantages. He won everything that he needed to before he came into F1. He got the ticket. He got the Red Bull ticket in a seat against a driver who we had some doubts about. And here he is on the back, right at the back of the grid, every single race, not picking up any points. Now has four races to prove himself against Yuki Tsunoda, and he can't do it. He should be doing miles better.
That he should.
Man, he managed to fumble his entire career, long career potentially.
He dropped it. Mm-hmm. Poor Nick, bless him.
Right. So that 30 seconds
with you.
Oh. And why Checo Perez is the biggest fumble in Formula One in 3, 2, 1. Go. Checo has taken this Red Bull car that Max is proving can be dominant. He 20-second gap in the first four or five races, yet he's taking this opportunity, completely squandering it firmly on his own account. The pace isn't even a massive issue. It's decision-making. That's the thing that's hard to quantify, hard to argue with, right? Because if his pace was off, that's a different story. Maybe it's just a bit of a skill issue, but his decision making in Austria, you can't be doing that. In Silverstone, you can't be doing this. You can't be going out early. What's wrong with you? That, wow, that really does go quickly.
It does go quickly. I looked at you, I literally season. Looked at the watch, it said 26. I was like, I thought it'd be like 5.
You guys do this every week though, right?
Yeah, you usually get a bit lower. Yeah.
We've changed it to 30 seconds just for this one. Just I feel we've got the knowledge to back up 30 seconds.
You know what I really highlighted is how many big fumblers there actually are. Right? One at the moment. Wow. Fumbler they were all central. Compelling.
Yeah, there wasn't any in there that I didn't believe.
Yeah, fumbler no. Central. I think everyone believed potentially what they said, maybe apart from you.
I think of those four, I think Ferrari for me, like in terms so of...
consistent, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just like the position they were in, to be in the position they were in the start of last season, to now be where they are relative to Red Bull, like 9th and 10th. And again, you can only talk about car performance in the context and you mentioned this earlier in terms of Mercedes, which I agree with in terms of their processes, right? These cars don't go anywhere if you don't have a driver behind the wheel. It's not just about the driver. It's about the pit stops. It's about everything. Everything has to come together. It's not just the person behind the wheel. If you're just driving a KA around the track, then you're not going to win, right? Yeah. So I think that's where Ferrari have just, they give us that hope.
Oh my God.
And then bye. Gone.
But in the most stupid of circumstances as well, always such...
Charles Leclerc is such a good driver, man.
Doesn't deserve it.
I don't
even think science deserves it half the time as well, man.
But Ferrari needs to take the emotion out of it. This is the problem. Every time something bad happens, they make a quick execution, someone's out the door and they bring somebody else in. And it's just a revolving door that... Which means they're just stuck in the same position the whole time.
Yeah. Going to be about to start crying. For the ills of Scuderia Ferrari.
I still don't think Ferrari win this one though. It's got to be the FIA.
Scuderia Ferrari. Well,
I honestly backed myself when I said the FIA as well.
I think so too.
I tell you what it is. Here's the difference. The mismanagement of expectation because Ferrari
no expectations from the FIA.
FIA does
my expectations were low, but
don't expect anything from the FIA at this point. 1,200 bloody track limit infringements. Yeah, course. Ooh. Typical FIA. Ooh. Check this out.
Literally warned about it before the race as well.
Mate, standard. We knew from last year it was always going to be chaos.
Yeah, that's
but
bad.
Ferrari are just like. Just when I thought I was out.
We've been here since 1950, since it all started.
Track me
and terrible.
It's just Tom Arcana.
The reason why I think it might still be the FIA over Ferrari though is because it is quite literally your job to organise. But you might, and if you can't organise yourselves not stick to your own rules. I don't mean that. But if you can't actually enforce your own rules half the time properly, if you find yourselves... I mean, Japan last year.
Oh
how
God.
Were we finding out that Max Verstappen won his second driver's championship?
Gosh.
Like that? Noxies. No one knew.
Was he finding out that?
He only realised...
Fire Johnny Herbert. But bro, I will say this to
you. Ruin the whole moment.
Well, you forget about Science crashing and Gasly going past like...
Oh, my
the track. Oh, I mean, that whole week...
Just a tad.
And all of this happening in an era where FOM, I think, have got their house in order. They've come up with a set of technical
Kind of, Shez. Kind of. We just spoke to all the ills of the FOM.
I think mostly speaking, yeah, it's easy to criticise.
True. I mean, they've definitely, I think the FIA are working with a management team that are miles ahead of who they've worked with before. And I think the roles have been reversed. I think the FIA, back in the, back when, God rest his soul, Charlie Whiting was still around, they were the ones that were in control and FOM were the ones that didn't know what they were doing. It's been completely switched on its head now.
Let me just say this about the FIA though. Aside from like the life-threatening safety issues, it's almost like I just don't, not to re-harp the mismanaged expectations things, but they're like a nameless, faceless entity. I don't care about the FIA. Scuderia Ferrari here though, are wasting away one of my favourite drivers' careers. In have you seen Charles Leclerc of late, Jess? He looks like he's been... It looks like Ferrari have sucked the life out of his face.
Him and Carlos were proper snappy this week.
He just got no hope. Like, he looks like a man with no hope.
Team radio was not Charles actually... I mean, obviously, they were annoyed at each other in the moment, but it kind of felt like... Yeah, these two are just vexed all the time now.
And science isn't even making the calls anymore.
Mate, it's a great tragedy over there at Scuderia Ferrari. As much as I hate the FIA, Scuderia Ferrari is a bigger fumble for me because it burns me more as an F1 fan. It's like...
Well, what I will say though, just as a you know, play devil's advocate here, the FIA will still exist next season. Ferrari will still exist next season. But Nick De Vries' F1 career won't. So in fairness, he may well be, actually fumbled to a level where he won't even
you know,
be
you know,
here
you know the biggest season. Fumble with De Vries is that he picked AlphaTauri instead of Williams.
Oof.
Because imagine De Vries had gone with Williams. I think in that environment, Val's approach to Logan has been polar opposite to Red Bull's approach with De Vries. Yeah. And I think that would have worked well for him.
But I think Nick would have, the reason I don't think is because I think actually, and I'm arguing against myself, is because I think this would have happened to Nick wherever he went.
Slack.
Because, I mean, how old is he? He's 28 now.
He's 28,
He's 28. He's established in other categories. He's done well in those categories, but coming into Formula One at that age.
It's been a tough
thing. I think it's tricky.
Him and Albon were teammates back in, I think, F2 or F3. They did used to be teammates at once. I think, because they had... who is it? Narei, I think it's Fukuzumi, one of the Japanese drivers. I think him, Albon, and De Vries were teammates. Maybe it was F3, maybe it was F2, I can't remember. But I think, you know, De Vries was right up there with Albon and Norris in that year. And I just think, obviously, career went on a different trajectory. I think he would have done better without the pressure cooker of Red Bull. I mean, who knows? But I think Williams worked for him. He got that result. I know it is Monza,
flattered.
It did, It flattered to see.
I think he'd be in that sort of Logan Sargeant position right now, but at 28 rather than
22. I think selfishly for him, it would have been better to go to Williams for sure. But who knows? Anyway, look, boys, we could go on honestly all night, but we should probably wrap the podcast here. So thank you, honestly, so much for watching, listening, wherever you are in the world. 5-star like, subscribe, Apple Podcasts. Pixo, world, I was going to, whatever was on your t-shirt, this is worldwide.
Worldwide.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's even a full
worldwide.com/Niren.
Yeah, catch us on Worldstar Hip Hop. We'll be there as well.
Catch out Shez and Cameron on your socials. Quick plug, go on before we
Cameron wrap. F1 and Cameron F1 Live on the YouTubes and Cameron F1 YT on Twitter.
And at ShezMed on Twitter.
Boys, we'll definitely get you two back. This might have been my favourite podcast we've done.
What? Big discussion.
Homo says that to all the girls.
He does not. Only to my dog. Thank you again, everyone, for listening and watching. And we'll see you next week.
Nice.
Ciao.